quite have a quorum. Maybe you can do all the talking that you need to do before we... Another one? Okay. Representative Markford.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members, and I really appreciate everyone's help in moving this along. As I think this is a effort and a council that is absolutely necessary, very integral to what we're going to be facing as we look at the budgets down the road. Now, Madam Chair, members, I have an amendment, and I know we can't move that, but could I talk about that very quickly?
Is this DE2 amendment? No, this is our.
Yeah, there should be an A4 amendment.
Yep.
Sorry, it was a late night.
And what that does is that this amendment assures that in the makeup of the council, where there's two members from the Senate and two from the House, it guarantees one is from each caucus. And then the second part of that amendment deals with that if a member wants to speak when this council is looking at waiving rules or enforcement of procedural laws, that it would require that they be heard. So it's kind of a safeguard for some of the various groups. Then I would like to offer an oral amendment when we get going, and that is going to be on... That is going to be on page 15.27. 15.27. And as Mr. Shepherd say, I think the best way to do that is delete the number 3.
Woo.
Basically, delete 350,000 and insert 50,000. And that was a meeting and agreement with Representative Carlson and looking at what dollars were available. So the appropriation will go from 350,000 to 50,000. So that would, I'd like that ultimately incorporated into the bill also, if that would be okay. All right, Madam Chair and members, I know many of you have already heard that, this bill. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Representative Markwood, is that supposed to be one-time only money?
That, Madam Chair, that is correct, one-time money. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, as we face, and yesterday on the House floor, and of course with the ruling we've received, our budget situation has only gotten more difficult. And next year, as we look at, and into the future, as we look at balancing a whatever that could be, $4 to $7 billion budget, we are going to have to utilize every single tool that we have that we can deal with those challenges. And what that's going to require is, on the revenue side, growing the economy, which only takes you so far. And on the other side, it's going to be looking at redesign and reform, and how can we get better outcomes and better results at a better price. And, you know, we've got committees that work and committees that do these type of things. But we need a council, we need a body that can focus like a laser beam, put its entire heart and soul into looking at these ways in which to deal with the budget, which is increasing reform, accountability, value, and efficiency for taxpayers. It's putting taxpayers first at every instance. And there needs to be a group that is free from politics and free from having to work on the budget. They need to just be able to focus on this. So what does this group do, and why would this help dealing with the budget? One of the requirements of the council is that right out of the chute, by January 15th of next year, this group would come with recommendations to the legislature and the governor in looking at ways to get efficiencies, looking at technologies, how can we get efficiencies there. But it also would recommend looking at state and local government structural redesign and looking at how we can get more value for the dollar. I also want to emphasize that when we talk about redesign, a lot of people think that's just cutting. And we get a bad name for redesign. Redesign is increasing value to the taxpayer. and value is outcome per dollar. So that's the key. Another thing that this council would do is have the ability to waive rules and the enforcement of procedural laws. What this would do is allow local units of government and the state government to get rid of burdensome bureaucracy, to streamline government, to take away obstacles that get in the way of these entities getting the highest possible performance and outcome to its taxpayers. I think that is crucial. A third thing, it would incentivize local units of government with grants for cities and counties doing redesign, looking at sharing services. Another very important factor of the council would be to commission studies, much like the Washington Policy Institute that was talked about over at the Humphrey Institute when we had that day together. It would be sort of a consumer reports, if you will, of government. For example, if you wanted to look at how to close the achievement gap, this council, this policy group, would go out and take a look at that and say, how do you get the best value for the dollar? And so that you're actually targeting your limited dollars that things that get the best results. Also, we make sure that there's recommendations by this council that looks at reform, looks at around the nation, even around the world, things that are working. This would also serve as a clearinghouse. A lot of these would be pilot projects that would come back. This would be an innovation hub. So these are all very, very important.
Representative yes. Markert, we do have a quorum. Very good. Officially called the meeting to order.
Madam Chair, I move that House File 2227 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. And I move the A4 amendment.
Okay, we have to add, okay, Representative Winkler moves the bill, and we have, and he moves the A4 amendment,
Madam
and
Chair.
We need an addition to the A4 amendment. We have to, on 15.35, we have to add the language, this is a one-time appropriation. So he incorporates that. And then the change in the number. Yes, okay.
I incorporate all that into my motion, Madam Chair.
You can't incorporate it into the motion for the bill.
No, on the amendment. I incorporate that into my motion, the A4 amendment.
Yes. Okay.
Madam Chair. Just one quick housekeeping matter on the A4 amendment. I'm wondering whether, Representative Markert, you'd be okay if on line 1.3 and on line 1.5 before the word minority, we would put in the word largest. I say that. This has come up with other bills that I've carried over the years. Remember last term we had the case where there was a third minority caucus, Representative Olson, and you wouldn't necessarily want to get representation to every minority caucus. So yeah. It would be the largest, and this is with all due respect to former Representative Olson, but just in general, there could be a situation where there are many minority caucuses than one. So.
I already have a green opponent, too. So.
Okay. Madam Chair and Representative Simon, I would certainly accept that.
Madam Chair, I'd incorporate that into my motion.
Okay. Okay, you've heard the Winkler motion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes.
And then, Madam Chair, would you also, could someone make a motion for on the appropriation?
It was made.
Oh, that was.
We were incorporated.
Yeah. Okay. I only have one little question, and I'm sure it's going to come up later in the process. This is maybe the third innovation proposal that we're seeing, and if innovation were dollars, we'd be out of our budget problems. Innovation built, but I don't want to sit down and do side by. So we've had the swales bill. Well, that's kind of cooperation. We have the Downey language, which is in our bill that's coming up, and that's kind of paired with the Bonhoeff bill, which is I think in the Betzel state government finance bill. And how do all these kind of come together? How do all these come together? Are we going to have dueling innovation strategies or what?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's a huge question. And this bill actually...
Just answer it in a little.
Madam Chair, I am enthused about this bill. So I will keep that short. But this bill does actually combine four innovation bills. The one you mentioned, Representative Downey's, Representative Thiessen, Representative Hilty, and Representative Mariani, puts them all into one. And I would also say that it's very distinct from the Swales-McFarland bill.
Okay.
They complement, but they're very distinct functions.
Okay. Representative Simon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Marquardt, I'm a big fan of the bill. I think it's great for reasons that I've said in other committees and don't need to repeat here. But my concern is $50,000 enough to do the job? I understand why, we all do, why you had to go way down from 350 to 50. I would just hate to see a great idea almost set up for, if not failure, then you know, substandard results by underfunding it. Can you talk about how far, speaking of innovation, how far can you make $50,000 go?
Yeah. Madam Chair and Representative Simon, certainly in recognition of the budget and so forth, it's at $50,000. And, you know, that is a concern, but there are, and a lot of the dollars go to the innovation grants. And I also think there's ways in which we can maximize those dollars more and still get local units of government to give them incentives to do that just with some sort of seed dollars. You know, you would have an executive director in commissioning some of these studies. But remember, in the bill also, there is at least a one-to-one match by the foundations, right, and so forth. And many, many folks out there are ready to go. So they may even come in with higher than a one-to-one match.
Okay.
So I think this bill would not hurt the main core of what this group could do.
Could you point out where, I was going to ask about a match, because I think this is going to be a great project to get matches. Would you point out where the matching language is?
Madam Chair, that is line 15.34. The appropriations in this section are contingent on receiving a dollar-for-dollar match from private sources. 15.34, Madam Chair.
Oh, yes. Okay. Okay. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Chair Kahn. And Representative Marquardt, do you know when we got rid of the old Board of Innovation and Cooperation?
When the Republicans.
Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, it started in 1993, and I believe it was 2003 that it was cut. 2002 or 2003 it was cut. And, you know, at the time, at least in 1999, it was getting $7 of savings, actual taxpayer savings, the $1 spent. So in what it was set out to do, it was doing very effectively.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt, that may be one person's opinion. I actually had the duty to serve on that board for a number of years, so it took us 4 or 5 years when we took the majority to get rid of it. And I remember having to read dozens of applications, and God bless Mr. Geldman. He's a great guy.
He's right here too.
Okay. you know, from my perspective, and he made the comment about professors that grade hard and professors that grade more easy as we as a group, and I must have been one of the professors that grade hard, but in reviewing dozens of applications, two or three maybe in my mind even had merit. And when you talk about the savings, nobody factors in the cost of the individual units of government putting all these grants together. My guess is in a macro sense,
amen,
if you took all the time wasted putting together applications for ideas that either just didn't work or they should have been doing anyway without coming to a board to get a little bit of money, I'm not sure that overall taxpayer spending was actually reduced. So I'm not a big fan of your bill. It makes me ponder that if I've been here long enough to get rid of stuff and it's coming back, maybe it's time, no, with no disrespect to the chair, of course, but maybe it's time to leave.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, there were up through about 1993, to 99, there's about 510 applications that came in, and about 80 were granted for grants and so forth. And they sent out about $4.6 million, and there's almost $15 million in savings. And in ongoing savings, it was about $7.2 million a year, with an annual budget at that time, I think, about $1 million, about 1 to 7. But, you know, the comment would come up, I know, is that why should we give cities and counties dollars for doing things that they should be doing otherwise? And my comment to that is that we send out $1 billion a year and local government aid, county program aid, market value homestead credit. I think we need to make, we have the obligation to make sure that cities and counties are spending those dollars wisely, efficiently, and getting the best result for the taxpayer. And also, the question, why should the state pay for that? Many of these projects would be pilot projects that the whole state would emulate. And so the whole state ends up benefiting from what one city may do. So I certainly respect, and I know it was, you know, the Board of Innovation was cut. This actually goes beyond the Board of Innovation in the strategic plan and also that Policy Institute portion of it also, and other recommendations that we've made.
Representative Downey? Oh, hope finished.
I'm done, Madam Chair.
Representative Downey?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have a couple of comments. Because I think I'm ending up where Representative Holberg is, that in the end, I don't think I'm going to support this. And I, before going into some of the reasons why, I have had a chance to meet with Representative Mark Ward a couple times and talk about it and participate in a forum at the Minnesota Chamber that I think was really positive and productive. And I know you've done really great work back in your hometown when you were on the city council there. So all of this is moving in the right direction. And frankly, I think a lot of the ideas in here are perfectly good ones, but I would point out a couple of differences between the commission that Senator Bonhoff and I authored a bill on, and for which we're hoping to still continue to move some language in conference committee. Her language is in the Senate version of the bill, and I have kind of a paragraph that matches up close enough that we can conference the two bills. But here's the differences, I think. This is very incremental. Kind of process oriented, pretty heavy on the oversight mechanisms and processes, and very focused on just incremental process improvement, what you might call Kaizen, just individual events that make an incremental change, all positive, all good, in local government. And frankly, you know, you look at the challenge that we have ahead of us here just in the next 10 days, let alone what we have over the next 12 months. To really fix this fundamental structural problem we have, and members, we just can't, nibbling around the edges isn't even close to enough. And the commission that Senator Bonhoff and I came up with are talking about very large-scale ideas. How do you make the interaction between state and local governments more effective? Can you consolidate? Can you privatize and outsource? Much bigger concepts that are going to get us the bang for the buck that we need to close the $6 billion gap. This bill, this proposal here, talks about creating another kind of legislative governmental authority, and the Senator Bonhoff bill in mind, there isn't anybody from the legislature. This is asking people who are big into fundamental organizational redesign, large-scale improvements, to take an outside eye to what we're doing across the span of state and local government and find ways to make efficiencies. So this is, in my mind, a little overly governmental, and the other one is less so, frankly, kind of intentionally so. I don't know about the grant process and the time frame, but members, we've got to save $6 billion from our budget in 12 months. I don't even know if we'll issue a grant in 12 months here, and most of these things aren't going to even come close to the dollars that we need. And to the point about creating pilots that we can emulate, members, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of examples of shared services and other kinds of things that local units of government are doing. My old firm does some of this business. They produced a report of all kinds of opportunities for local governments to make improvements. So I just don't, I don't think this, it's not bad, but it doesn't go far enough, and it seems to be creating another layer of government and a bureaucracy on top of the bureaucracy. It just doesn't seem to be quite as intensive and powerful and focused on big issues that we need to focus on. So, members, I'm probably not going to support this just for those reasons, that I think we would distract ourselves if we really thought this was going to accomplish something for us in the next budget cycle.
Well, of course, if we did have a consolidated data center and so we could keep track of all of these, it would be, we'd be able to. Yeah. No, we can't. But anyway, okay, are there any other questions or comments? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I I thought it was just kind of ironic. I'm just looking at the fiscal note and underneath the bill description, that the bill states that the state agencies responsible for enforcement of unfunded state mandates shall assign staff, and they will provide administrative support services. And I believe this is without compensation. In other words, it's an unfunded mandate.
To the state, though, we don't count those as unfunded. We just count them as channeling the jobs into the proper channels in which we want to see them. Even really? If we send it to the Secretary of State's office.
Madam Chair, is that in definition and statute somewhere?
Yes.
I won't question you because I'm sure your memory is very, very
no.
good.
No. That's custom and usage. Okay. We do, finance is kind of waiting. If we pass this bill, finance is waiting for it. So unless there are critical, Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Marquardt. I have some of the concerns that Representative Downey has. I think it's important that we look at a lot of different ideas of how we want to redesign and improve efficiencies in government and whatnot. And I guess I would just like to talk to you at some point about a bill that I sponsored that had to do with the Sunset Commission. It would be the Sunset Commission that was modeled after the Texas Sunset Commission. And the reason I like that language is because it actually, instead of just making recommendations, it would require us to take action on them. And I think one of the problems that we have in government is we tend to have a lot of different recommendations that are made. We have, you know, the auditor making recommendations to do X, Y, or Z and make changes. And this seems like we're going to have another layer of government that's going to make recommendations. And my concern is that recommendations don't turn into much of anything unless we're required to take action on them. So I would just encourage you, and, you know, I'll try to work, talk with you through the process on some of the ideas that we have on our side about, you know, looking at asking the legislature to actually do something about the recommendations that are made, because it just seems like we all have a lot of papers on our desk that sit there and they're nice ideas, but without the requirement for us to do anything, they just sort of sit there. Even if one or two or 10 legislators have a good idea, they just it's very hard to make those things move, those things take action, unless there's some teeth in legislation that would require us to do so. And the other thing I'd like you to consider, and I will share my bill with you and have you take a look at it, but is the idea of sunsetting things. And I think one of the problems that we have in government is that once something is funded or on the books, whether it be a board or a program or an agency or, you know, whatever it is, it doesn't go away. And even if we were to just make recommendations, so I would just like you to consider the idea of, you know, what I would like to see is, as they have done in Texas, is that everything sunsets on a revolving basis. And unless we take action to keep something going, whether board, agency, program, then it would end. And that way it requires us to take affirmative action on something, as opposed to just sort of washing our hands of something and letting it go on and on and on, whether or not it's a good program or idea or not. So I probably won't support this at this time, and it's not that I don't think it's a good idea that we move in this direction. I just think that it should be a lot stronger, because if it's not stronger, it really risks being just another level of bureaucracy and another layer of smart people that tell us how we can improve things, but then we don't do anything with it. And so I applaud you for working toward this, and I think just the idea that you're working on this and Representative Downey and Senator Bonoff and several others are working on this gives me great encouragement, because obviously there are a lot of us that understand that we need to do something radically different than we're doing now. So I really appreciate you bringing this forward and hope we can all work together and come up with the best ideas possible. So thank you.
Let me make a suggestion. I don't want to do it now because we really want to get this bill to finance, but if it passes. But let me make one suggestion, Representative Pepin, listening to what you're saying, is that you put a sunset on this. I think at one time we had, or maybe we just talked about the sunsets, and there's a lot of just automatically doing that, which I always thought was kind of worthless. But why don't you work with Representative Marquardt and put a sunset on this board and also put a requirement for a pretty specific report on what kinds of things were done, and some, you know, some, I don't know, you want to audit the savings that we're going to allegedly see and so forth. But I think the two of you working together could come up with some more useful language than just an automatic sunset. Mm-hmm. So why don't you do that?
Madam Chair and members, you know, Section 11 of the bill has some pretty, I think, stringent and accountable reporting, and I will take that advice, and we can even strengthen that further. But it talks about getting $3 for every of savings for every dollar spent, to recommend $20 of savings for every dollar spent. So it certainly can be strengthened up, but we tried to make it somewhat accountable, so there's audited amount of efficiencies and savings listed and reported back to the legislature and the governor.
Okay. Mr. Rhodes, I keep wanting to say representative, so even though you're now at such a higher level.
You can say anything you want to spell it right.
Okay.
Jim Rhodes, Department of Administration. Representative Marquardt has talked to me before, as he was working through the process, as well as some of our folks, and we appreciate it very much. When you change the figure from 350 to 50, I got a little nervous about Department of Administration.
Someone has a cell phone they need to turn off. So, okay.
Nobody's admitting to that.
Yeah.
Our Department of Administration's role, as far as I think we're going to be supporting this effort with whoever you have as a part-time person that's running it, and I just, how is that going to work as far as the money situation?
Representative Marquardt.
Yeah, Madam Chair and members, and Representative Rhodes brings up a great point. In moving back from 350 to 50 as we move forward, we need to look at absolutely some of those things. It wouldn't be quite the scale. But again, there is matching dollars coming in, and maybe greater than one-to-one. I know folks are ready to go, but certainly we need to stay in conversation as we move forward on this. Absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. If there's no Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quick, I know Representative Marquardt, we have some of the costs here, and I know that we don't necessarily do any dynamic modeling, but do you have any sense of what savings there could possibly be over the next biennium if this is implemented?
Madam Chair and Representative Sanders, know that's tough to say, because some figures I have is something that Mr. Geldman wrote in 1999, and that was first 6 years. It had numbers that I had indicated. So, you know, of course, there'd be time to get going, so I would not be able to say that. But what I would be able to say is that you would have a group that main and only focus would be to look at ways to get these systems. And as Representative Downey had mentioned, talking about just kind of big reform. In two different instances in the bill, it talks about state and local structural redesign. I mean, we're talking about looking at expanding things on still keeping high value, but at a better price. So, no, I would not be able to give you a dollar amount, but I just think the effort there and these recommendations, this is a crucial tool to solving our budget deficit.
Okay. Representative Sanders, one of the frustrations to me a little bit is if you're trying to do something that's going to look, and again, I'll get back to an issue like the consolidated data center, that when you look at any of the evidence, you're going to see really big savings down the line, but it's really hard to see it while you're building it and while you're doing it. And our focus on a biennium is really hard for something that might just require a longer lead time than that. So, you know, it's not nothing we can do about it. It's just the frustration to me. So, any other comments or questions? Okay, Representative Winkler renews his motion that House File 227 as amended, 227 as amended, be recommended to pass and go to the full Finance Committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion passes.
Madam Chair, members, thank you so much.
Okay. Now, we're now back to, there were a couple of issues to be resolved in the other bill, and then maybe we can, we can get out. One of them, is Representative Mahoney here? Yeah, great. Thank you. Representative Mahoney, there were a certain number of glazed eyes, and we got to the issue on the
I think some of our earlier morning committees.
And so we'd like to, it's currently in the bill, what's that? 21. On what page, Mark? Page 13. Would you give us a little rundown of that
Certainly, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm working off of a copy of the original bill, 3205, and I'll refer to that number. Originally, the bill was to quite extensively help small communities and small community banks and credit unions by requiring the state to do a preference, much like a couple of other states have done or attempted to do this year. After lengthy conversations and a Senate that didn't seem to be as enamored by the idea,
I'm sure Senator Betzel will be thrilled when it gets to him.
I have a few things to say about the Senate, but I won't do them publicly. I have to get to a conference committee at the present time, so I'll be brief. We brought this down to a study of how the state could take a bigger part in utilizing the small banks and credit unions in and around the state. Certainly, they're not going to do a tremendous amount in the metro area. This helps a lot of rural bankers, a lot of rural credit unions. It might help one or two in the cities in the metro area, but I doubt it. It's the bankers I've talked to, the credit unions I've talked to, MMB, whom I've talked to, are very comfortable sitting down trying to figure out ways that they can get more money out to our rural, our smaller banks and credit unions around the state. One of the reasons we would like to do that is that for every dollar the state puts into those small financial institutions, they have more money to lend to Main Street businesses, and our small institutions proportionately do a larger amount of small business loans than our large banks. Now, granted, our large banks do a significant and overwhelming number, but proportionately, small bankers and small financial institutions are much more attuned to the bankers, the needs of a smaller community. And again, as I said, Minnesota Credit Union Network, Independent Community Bankers, and the Minnesota Bankers Association either support or have no position one way or the other on it. So I can answer any questions.
Okay. Representative Dunn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment and a thank you to Representative Mahoney. This idea actually sprung up in testimony, if I remember right, way back during a jobs task force hearing. And I think everybody's mind started spinning about, boy, this might be a good idea. And as we continue to vet it and hear more about it in our small business caucus, it took hold. And then when we got feedback from the larger banks and realized how much of what we're depositing with them was already going out to the small business community and the like, I just think this is a really appropriate step. It still seems like a great idea, and I think Representative Mahoney has explained the reasons why, and doing a study and getting a little more data behind it before we make a final decision seems like a really reasonable first step. So I support this and appreciate the effort he's put in to get it to the point where we would actually study it to know whether it would have the benefit that we're hoping it would.
Okay, Representative
Kiffmeyer. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mahoney, do you have a potential list when it says $2.5 billion in assets? Do you have a potential list of who might qualify even in this regard? Because I would suspect your study would only be focused on that criteria. But do you already have a list of which that might be?
Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, Do I have a list of the financial institutions that meet the $2.5 billion criteria?
That's correct.
It would be simpler if I told you which ones are not under 2.5, and that would be Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank.
Okay.
Otherwise, every institution in the state of Minnesota, financial institution in the state of Minnesota, meets the criteria.
Okay. All right. I think my concern is more vested in including banks and credit unions. And so, but nonetheless, since it is a study, I think that at this time, I think also we just have so many studies that I'm seeing pop up all over the place. In the same bill, we have another commission on service innovation. Lots of duplicates, lots of words. So it's a study. So I guess we'll move forward.
Okay. Any Representative Pepin?
Thanks, Madam Chair. And Representative Mahoney, do you have a, I'm just curious, do you know right now how many of the state's contracts are currently with larger banks and how many of them are with community financial institutions? I'm just curious. I guess my concern is I'm just wondering, and obviously we'll find out more in the study, I guess I'm a little skeptical that the smaller institutions would be able to handle some of our large accounts. And I'm wondering if you know kind of what the percentage is right now. I'm just kind of curious
as to what the... Madam Chair, Representative Pepin. I don't think the study will... yes, the ratio is about... Our larger banks have approximately 300 of the 400 accounts. So it's about a, 3-to-1, 4-to-1, something like that. But members, to alleviate some of the concerns about a study, as you'll notice, there's not much of a reporting requirement. This is really primarily getting the state and the banking and the financial institutions of the state of Minnesota talking to each other, something they have not done as well as I think our small communities would benefit from.
Okay. Any other comments? Representative Pepin.
Thank you. I'm curious about the, thank you, I appreciate that. Why you chose the Carlson School of Management, and then just the logistics of the study. So how would they be in contact? Where would they get the data they need? Would they work with management and budget? Or I guess I'm just wondering how it would work and why you chose the school that you did, or who would do it at the school.
Madam Chair?
Okay. Representative Pepin.
You know, I'm such a big business kind of guy.
Yes, you are.
I thought we'd go to the place where they train all those big business type people, the Carlson School of Business. And they also stepped up and said, fine, we'll do that. The data, I think the data will be gone from wherever they can.
We go through the chair, Representative. Yeah. Once in a while.
Very generous, recognizing people at almost any moment.
the data that they will collect is from I don't really know exactly where the data will come from. My suspicion and I'm led to believe it'll come from the banking associations, it'll come from the small financial institutions, and it will come from whatever the finance we call our finance department this year.
Okay.
Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to confirm that the unit at the Carlson School isn't called something like the Bremer Bank Center for Community Banking or something like that.
Okay.
I call it a lot
this
of things.
Actually, not an amendment before us. It was just kind of a little fuzziness about how this got into the bill, so we thought this was a good opportunity to clear that up.
Madam Chair, I suspect where the fuzziness came from was that I focused on the page 1 up to line 2.21, which was all the requirements of the you don't have that. It's on 3205.
Yeah. Okay.
Basically requiring the banks to actually, the state to actually start working with the small financial institutions. But seeing how that's all gone away,
okay.
I didn't focus much on that when I was presenting the bill.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for coming. Unless there are any motions or any comments. The next thing we do have an amendment. Do we have the Secretary of State? Oh, we're getting. Do we have? Oh, we don't have that amendment yet. Okay. The other item that we were going to work on was the problem of the materials transfer unit. And I guess we, has this been handed out? Is this a Downey amendment? Okay. And I guess we have people for the, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what you have in front of you, I think everybody, is a reworked amendment that I hope, on behalf of the Department of Administration, goes in the direction of satisfying some of the concerns of Chair Kahn. And so you can read the amendment here, and the materials transfer unit and state resource recovery units would be kind of, we would allow the Department of Administration to outsource them or do what they need to do to maintain the function without necessarily owning its operation internally, but also in an effort to address the chair's concerns, puts a couple of conditions on that. And what I thought, if I could, Madam Chair, I don't know how much time we have, but if I could invite the department down, sure. I'm not sure who would be the right representative. They explained to me some of the extenuating circumstances here in the when you listen to the circumstances, you realize that this function just flat out isn't going to work. There just isn't the revenue coming in for the service provided to support the function. And so I really think we need to give them the flexibility to do what they have requested, and especially given that we've asked DOA to come up with kind of enterprise-wide savings opportunities. This is one of those that would fit into that as well. So if we could just have the department offer some explanation of why this is so imperative.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. I think what we'll do is just to kind of give a general overview. I'm going to turn it over to Dave Fielding. By the way, my name is Sheila Rieger, for the record, Commissioner at the Department of Administration. We'll just give you a quick overview and then try to help explain the amendment a little bit. Mr.
Fielding? Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Fielding, Director of Plant Management. As we began to touch on yesterday, the materials transfer unit has experienced a significant loss of business over the course of the last 18 months. And during that time, we have attempted to reduce our expenses to the full extent that we can. I should remind you also that we have some functions that this unit supports which are required by statute, including the delivery of mail, the Resource Recovery Center, and the collection of recycled or probably of disposed waste. The expense reductions have included the layoff of several staff employees who did have bumping rights and who ended up in positions elsewhere in the state. In addition, we've been selling vehicles, again, in an attempt to cut those losses. But as we put together the business plan for the coming year, it is apparent to us that the losses that we've been sustaining this year, which have been in the order of $15,000 to $20,000 a month, are going to continue. And so if we project out with our current rates, the anticipated loss in fiscal year 11 will be over $160,000. So we have to do something. This is an internal service fund. We can't. We have no source of revenue for this business other than the revenue that's generated by the service that we provide. One might ask, well, what about increasing your rates? We're already at market at $45.50 an hour. In order to balance based on current volume, which I think is a risky assumption because the business activity continues to decline as agencies begin to begin their reductions, that rate would have to increase by 40% to $62 an hour, and which would put us completely out of the range of any acceptable rate. That's materials transfer. That's an immediate problem. We have to be able to reduce expenses further, we require this amendment in order to do so. It's the best way to do so. It's not the only way. Resource recovery is an issue which is, I think, going to be front and center and very similar to materials transfer over the course of the next several months. Beginning on July 1st, because of the the elimination of the general fund money that has previously supported that operation, this now turns into an internal service fund. We have to bill for services. 40% of our business is for state agencies located in leased facilities. And while the landlords under the leases are required to provide recycling services, they are not required to use us. And so as we have canvassed those landlords in anticipation of the change July 1st, we have learned that they have already in other buildings and would intend to bring into these buildings low-cost and in many cases no-cost services to support their recycling needs. So we anticipate that on and after July 1st, we will begin to lose 40% of the current volume that is in the state recycling center. We will be charging the agencies that are located in our owned buildings, our capital complex buildings, but the rates that we'll have to charge them, and remember, these are absolute increases. They have paid nothing up till now. So at a time when they're trying to reduce their expenses, the Resource Recovery Center is going to start sending them a bill. So we anticipate in very short order that we're going to be in a similar situation to what we are in currently with materials transfer, and it seems only prudent, therefore, to request this waiver for resource recovery to give us the ability, if our predictions come true, that give us the ability to go out and bid this service and try to find, make sure that we have the most cost-effective service support that we can.
Now, I know we try, well, first of all, I have a little problem with this language, because the example that we were given was we were given how we successfully managed to transfer out PrintCom, and that was done in a totally different way. A bill was, it was talked about like this. A bill was introduced. The bill passed through a set of committees with, testimony on both sides. And it was a process I think I'd be rather more interested in emulating than what we're being asked to do here. But I thought we did something about a state resource recovery unit. I thought we did that in our original omnibus bill, but was that something that then didn't get through the whole process, or did get through the whole process?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that language which we've attended to this session was for the purpose of allowing us to set resource recovery up as an internal service fund.
But and that did pass. That
yes.
Became law. Okay. You know, it seems to me that that might be something that we'd look at instead of moving in this direction. See how we have some time to see how that would work before we went and did this. And one of the language that I completely have problems with this is the last part of the last line in the first paragraph, which says, or the rates charged are greater than the amount that would be paid through a service contract. I think that's a given. There's a service contract you could always find. I mean, I don't know if you're going to be using, after the latest report, E-Verify to check the immigration status of the people who are being employed through the service contract. But, for some of these things, there are probably very, very low-cost items out there, and that just seems like a blanket statement. That part of the line seems like a blanket statement that you just would always do it at any time. So I'm certainly concerned about that. But my inclination is to say that you could study this and come back with more information, and we could introduce a bill next year and move in what would be a more orderly fashion. We do have an amendment before us, so I'm just putting that out as
Madam
a suggestion.
Chair, if I may, that last line was meant to, for a circumstance, for instance, let's talk about resource recovery for a minute. There are service providers out there that are providing that service at no cost and sometimes actually paying people for their goods. We are in a circumstance where we have to charge to cover all of our costs, and it's significantly higher. Therefore, our landlords, they don't want to pay us to do the work that they don't have to pay for. So that's what that's meant to be.
Well, the point is, obviously, in resource recovery, you know, I assume that these are businesses that have some need to make some profit and so forth, and they've discovered that because of what they recover and what and entering the recycling model, that it that they can do it at no cost. And so, for example, again, setting it up as an internal service fund, I think that would be something that could be taken into account. You know, I know that if money comes in, it goes into the general fund, but we're capable of having reports on that and then making sure that it goes back. I guess it's one of the things that happens with an internal service. It would go back to run, right, to run
Madam
the fund.
Chair, yeah. If I may, we know even in the best years in terms of the value of recycled material that's sold, that the revenue that we've been generating, which includes the 40% off-site, which we anticipate losing, is only 25% of the gross expense. So there is a net cost to running the State Resource Recovery Center of about $350,000 a year.
Well, the people now, that are doing it, what I'm saying is that the people who are doing it for nothing, and I understand all the differences between state and private, but somehow they've found some way to do that. And they're not, I'm sure they're not doing it as a charitable
endeavor. I understand. Madam Chair, I think it's a function of scale. We simply don't have a business that's large enough to be able to generate that kind of volume.
But we have all these three, four bills going through on cooperation and innovation and all of that stuff. Isn't that going to help solve the problem?
Well, I should take this form, if I may, for a moment. We talked about shared services.
Yeah.
We've been trying now since January of 2009 to enter into a shared service agreement with the University of Minnesota in order to be able to handle their confidential paper destruction. And as we sit here today in May of 2010, I still don't have that arrangement in place. If anybody on this committee has any leverage or ability to incent them to move forward aggressively in those conversations, I would welcome that help.
We'll get Representative Rukavina working on it.
All right.
Madam
Too
Chair.
Bad that bill's already out. We could serve them beer as we do it.
Okay. I don't know if it changed anything else.
Who are we looking at? Representative Downing.
Yeah. Madam Chair, just a couple thoughts or a couple comments. And one is, I think this just shows why we're in the position we're in overall from a state budget standpoint. When you think about a department wanting to make a very sound, not only economic decision, but just functional decision, knowing that there are private sector companies doing this far more effectively on a scale to deliver better service at a lower cost, and yet we're going to have to drive that agency through the bill-making process, multiple committee hearings, probably multiple legislative sessions in order to get the consensus, in order to make a change around a $350,000 business unit member. I mean, we have to add, what, how many zeros do we have to add to that to solve our challenge? And then multiply it times two. I mean, this is beyond belief, really, that we're going to ask this department, who has competitive bidders out there who would love to have this business, and we're going to require them to keep it in-house, lose money, not accomplish the objective we gave them in our state government finance bill previously, and do all of this in the face of the monumental challenge that we have. I just don't know how we couldn't support them in this, and I think it proves Representative Holberg's point about Representative Marquardt's bill. You know, we're going to add another commission on top of the committees that we already have to generate an idea like this that's going to take another 2 years to go through the legislative meat grinder to get rid of a $350,000 function that there's probably 20 companies in the Yellow Pages that would love to compete for that business. I mean, limited government, we talk about it a lot, but I mean, one of the simplest definitions is, if it's in the Yellow Pages, why is government doing it? And in this case, this is true in spades. So I don't mean to get all fired up here. It's early, and we were here late last night. We'll have plenty of time to talk about this stuff. I'll slur for the next 10 days, but this just seems to me to be an absolute no-brainer. And we've put some reasonable controls on here, I think, that give them the ability to just make a basic good decision. So I'm going to just argue that we support this amendment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. I do know we do want... Yes, it was moved. We do have Mr. Saad from AFSCME who wants to... We'll be very careful not to invite him to sit at the table. We'll get him. And Representative Bingham, do you want to hear from Mr. Saad?
Well,
do you want to say something?
No, I just had a quick question, and okay. I'll have a little bit of a soapbox in a second here because I don't want these two to get caught up in the crossfire. I mean, I think we're all getting a little weary. We've been sitting next to each other for like the last 60 out of 70 hours. So anyway, Representative Downey, is 911 in the yellow pages?
Madam Chair, I represent Bingham. I don't know that there are any 911 service providers in the yellow pages. I do know that companies or that local units of government that operate 911 functions are outsourcing major components of their infrastructure. If there's somebody out there that would offer a comprehensive 911 solution strategy to a local unit of government, I don't know that those exist in the yellow pages.
Well, outsourcing public safety is probably not a wise idea, and I'm sure you didn't mean to say that. But my point is that not just because something is in the yellow pages doesn't mean that government shouldn't do it. 911 is in the yellow pages. Just like last week or this week, whenever it was, when Representative Biskins got up and said that firefighters don't want someone knocking at their door and saying, I'm from the government, I'm here to help you. Because you know what? Just like I said to him, if your house was burning and a firefighter came and knocked on your door saying, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, you wouldn't turn him away. So let's tone down the rhetoric here about, you know, government can't do stuff, can't do that. You know, 911's in the yellow pages. My number's in the yellow pages as a government official, and I'm here to help my people.
And isn't no, it's in
blue pages.
Let's also point out that I guess we could do something like hire, as was done at some point, to hire Blackwater to take care of our security problems. Well, anyway, Representative Downey.
No bid contracts.
Madam Chair, actually, I won't respond directly. I think we need to tone up the rhetoric. We've been here. I've been in this legislature only, 15 months? And ever since I've been here, and I think you go all the way back and you look at the projections, even in biennial budget projections of sessions past, we've known this wall was going to hit us. I mean, we've known it, and we've ignored it for 15 months since I've been here. The only structural reform that we actually got through with general assistance medical care is because the governor put his foot down and forced us, and then we just passed a bill that tried to unwind it. I mean, I drove home from this place three nights ago, and I'm thinking, what in the world are we doing?
But
we're just totally putting our heads in the sand, so I think we need to...
Of course, I'm glad that you drove home on those roads that government had provided for you.
And Madam Chair, Representative Downey, this could go on for a while, so I appreciate that. But I just want to say...
Last thing,
that, Madam Chair,
and then we go
is that it wasn't you that cut $314 million. It was us.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey asked us to turn up the rhetoric, so why don't we hear from Mr. Saad first?
Yes.
And then I do have, to the amendment, I have some thoughts.
So you think that calling on Mr. Saad is the best way to tone down the rhetoric?
No. Representative Downey asked us to turn up the rhetoric, so for our friend Elliot Saad.
Okay. Mr. Saad.
Madam Chair, I'm, for the record, Elliot Saad. I'm the Executive Director of AFSCME Council 5, representing 43,000 public and nonprofit employees. And I've never been asked to turn down the rhetoric before, so that's a new one. But I'll turn it up a little bit. This is an important piece of public policy. And basically what this provision has done is it has done exactly what actually Representative Downey wants done, which is it forces agencies to sit down –
and actually meet with employees and try to find the best ways to deliver services. The union and its members deliver services incredibly efficiently. In fact, we've been doing it in this capital, keeping this capital beautiful, and this unit, by the way, participates in that, providing events without chaos in the capital. It does it in a professional and skilled way. The Capitol building interior remains beautiful because of the work that a number of these people do. They also do delivery from agency to agency, and as the agencies have been cut, yes, they have cut down, but they haven't cut out delivery. In fact, they're using another private sector firm for delivery. And the reason a private sector firm may be able to deliver stuff at somewhat less cost is not because it's more efficient, but because it treats its workers with minimum wage, it doesn't provide health insurance for its employees, and doesn't provide pension benefits. In other words, doesn't provide the living wage that everyone here, Madam Chair, including every representative of every party, would like their families to be able to provide for. So when people are working, they ought to be able to have a living wage, and they ought to be able to provide for their families. And that's how they also deliver service, because this is the United States of America, and people deliver service because they do things better because they're getting paid to do things better. The services that are provided by the materials transfer unit are unqualifiedly excellent. And I don't think that the Department of Administration is going to say that it's not. The issue here is how best to deliver the service. And in fact, this service can be delivered excellently. We have been trying to sit down. We have suggested various ideas about, an enhanced severance to get, if they need to get people reduced, to reduce complement. Some ways to get, if people want to get out, then get out with a little dignity and respect. I don't think that's too much to ask for. But the public policy here remains very sound. And that public policy says, you know, that we can do, if we have the ability to do the work in-house, we do the work in-house, and it forces us to sit down and figure out the most efficient ways to do that service. You give our members the tools and the resources, they can outperform any private sector operation in the public sector. They do so most efficiently. And I object to the myth that just because it's private, it's better than public. I mean, if that's the case, I'd like you to talk about that the next time you go to the airlines and have to take an airline flight and get your flight canceled, or sit on the tarmac for 3.5-4 hours, or other private sector services that, you know, that you get put on hold on a line and don't get to talk to someone. The fact is, we have problems in the public and the private sector. This is very sound public policy, 16C, and it does force the state and its employees to sit down and deliver services in the most efficient way possible. It has worked for a number of years. It's continuing to work. The union and its members are prepared to sit down, but we have a public building here. This building is public. The other building is public. The services that are provided in it ought to be accountable and held accountable to public workers. And I'd say that's the final issue. When one contracts out a service, one assumes that one's getting the most efficient service possible. But the fact of the matter is, you actually need people to oversee that and make sure that you're getting the best bang for the buck, which is why this body and the Senate passed the Transportation Accountability Act that was authored in this body by Representative Hornstein, and which has resulted in efficiencies being able to be developed in the Department of Transportation, where we could actually quantify that, for instance, when one does striping with a state employee on a state highway, on that highway that you got home safely on the other night, when one does striping by a state employee, that striping is 8 cents a stripe. When you contract that out, it's 31 cents a stripe. And the reason for that is because the company builds in various profit levels and other things for itself, which is fine. No one's saying a company shouldn't have to make a profit. But the most efficient way to deliver that service is in the public sector. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, 16C has been a very progressive and decent public policy. It forces the state and its employees to sit down and try to develop services in the most efficient way possible. The union stands ready to do this. We oppose this amendment. We would ask you to vote it down.
Let's go. Representative Taylor.
Well, you know, Madam Chair, and Representative Downey, to Mr. Seid's testimony and to the amendment, knowing a problem that's been out there since January of 2009 and having an amendment brought forward the first week or second week of May 2010, hold on a second, Madam Chair, if you could.
I was trying to tone down the rhetoric before it got escalated.
Well, but hold on a second, because there are real problem solvers on this committee and in the legislature who can help solve this problem knowing that the University of Minnesota has been one lever point, I referenced Ramsey and Hennepin counties yesterday. Representative Gardner has, I think, a decade and a half or two decades of experience working with public and private sector recyclers and knowing the business models of the public sector and the private and how bulk purchasing works, how margins and service revenues need to be there. And so now we're seeing something come forward that there's a problem of making this part of the state government enterprise work. But I can tell you the University of Minnesota is facing a similar problem. Ramsey County and Hennepin County are facing similar problems. The problem is we're trying to solve problems in silos, not collaboratively, not together, and not suspending our ideologies, but actually sitting down and saying, how can we do this right? Working the process, an amendment that I brought forward on daytime cleaning, that I wanted to put in statute, has resulted, I think, in an agreement that's making it work for the bargaining unit and for the state to save the money and get it going. I wanted it in statute. Mr. Side adamantly said that, no, we need to have these things negotiated. But it turns out that we need to actually set forward circumstances to allow that process to happen. So, Representative Downey, there's a reason we work through the process. I, like you, get frustrated and impatient because I want results and I want it to happen fast, and I get very frustrated with people who put up roadblocks just because they want to put up roadblocks. But I'm actually toning up the rhetoric to ask us to tone it down to get to a spirit of collaboration and get to the point where I don't think that just assuming that we're going to outsource is the right way, just as I think that just assuming that insourcing is always going to be cheaper. What we need to do is allow those conversations to happen, set forth a process so that we can solve this problem together.
Well, what I was starting to interject is I didn't want any criticism leveled on Representative Downey for bringing the amendment here today. This concept was kind of only started being talked to us by administration in the, you know, last couple of weeks, or at least in a way that I could remember it. So let's...
Madam Chair, if I may, there are a couple of things I think that we haven't brought up that I think the committee needs to understand. First of all, the reason that we are here as late as we are in this session is because we have been trying to work to find the solutions. We only came here because we have exhausted those alternatives. We have been meeting with the union, as Mr. Side pointed out. We have been sitting down, and I will also point out that we offered enhanced SEP to every one of those who were in an effort to try to get people to retire so that we wouldn't be faced with this situation. All of those enhanced SEP offers were rejected. Now, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm simply saying, I mean, the employee obviously has the option of taking it or not taking it. But we've done all that work, and we are here today because we have run out of options. Now, we're faced with a situation, if we leave here today without action on this, you know, the question is, well, what are you going to do? Well, what we're going to have to do is find a way to reduce cost. We cannot operate a business that's going to be hemorrhaging $160,000 a year that will end this year in a negative retained earnings situation. No business can run that way. And believe me, we have looked at every possible option that we have. We've brought up resource recovery simply because it is... materials transfer is a vision of where resource recovery will be in a short number of months. And because you won't be here and we're going to be faced with that problem, we need the ability to deal with that as the picture becomes clear. We're not saying automatically that this work would be contracted out. What we're saying is we have to have the ability to react to that if that becomes necessary.
Okay, well, first of all, if we made both of everything into an internal service account, that would spread, it wouldn't eliminate the problem, it would spread it over a much greater range. Second of all, from what I hear, if we gave you an appropriation of $160,000, would that cover the problem for this year at least?
Madam Chair, I'd have to talk to the folks in finance to get a clear picture. Obviously, if there's an opportunity for that, we'd be interested to talk about it. I just can't imagine in the environment we're in that that's an option. But I'll certainly sit at any meeting where you want to talk about it.
Okay, well, there are meetings occurring at a higher level than this committee that are discussing that. I don't know how you get invited to them.
No, I should point out, Madam Chair, that that's only for materials transfer. Yeah. I don't know what the price tag will be for resource recovery.
Well, we've already given you the ability to make that an internal service account.
Right.
So anyway, we do have the Downey Amendment before us. There might be, I can't support this. I don't intend to support this in the form it is. There might be, Representative Downey.
I could, and I want to defer to Representative Kalin if he has a follow-up question to his point in the discussion that was occurring, but I do have an oral amendment that I would like to offer that might bridge some of this.
Why don't you offer the oral amendment, and then if it's relevant, I'll...
Thank you, and Mr. Said, I in no way mean to denigrate any of the people or the performance of the work. We just have a circumstance where I think I would disagree with Representative Kalin that when we structure things so that collaboration can only occur on the House floor and at the committee table, we of necessity impose a process and a burden on just good decision making. And when we have a statute like 16C 085, we just flat out don't allow people to make common sense decisions. We don't empower them. We don't seem to trust them to do what's right. So I think what we're doing is one by one carving out little exceptions where we'll give people the authority to do what's right. And I don't think that's any denigration to the people that are doing the work. In fact, I hope it's trusting the entire organization to just do the right thing. So my oral amendment would be after the last line of the first paragraph, would be to add, the bargaining unit currently conducting the work shall be allowed to propose on the RFP to contract the services performed. And this is a very common and emerging concept called managed competition, where in cases where the public entity feels that there's potentially a better value proposition for the organization out in the market, not wanting to denigrate the people doing the work today, and wanting to offer them a chance to kind of prove by virtue of proposing on the contract, fair enough. And there are plenty of examples where the existing unit, kind of unencumbered by maybe the cost overhead of the organization they're in, goes out, spins off, proposes on the business, and actually wins it. So if you need me to repeat the language, I certainly will. And I'll say it slowly. The bargaining unit currently conducting the work shall be allowed to propose on the RFP to contract the services performed. And that would allow Mr. Side's organization to, in fact, prove and might unleash a whole world of collaboration with the University of Minnesota and other things without even having to come to our committee or the House floor for approval to do it in an area where I think good common sense decisions can be made. So, Madam Chair, I'll add that as an oral. I'll just incorporate it into my amendment if I could. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any comments on that from either Mr. Side or committee members? Mr. Side.
Madam Chair, where we've had a chance to have these types of discussions and put safeguards in the law that we're comparing apples with or oranges with oranges, whichever fruit one wants to use. You know, we've engaged that in various places. You know, that's not something that we couldn't do with a more robust law than this. In fact, again, the Transportation Accountability Act that was passed by the House and the Senate and signed by the governor, in fact, lays out those costs and a way to examine those costs. And there is currently, I believe, an amendment in the Senate side to a bill that Senator Pogemiller has that would make that law for the entire state government and allow them to do that. We would be more supportive of doing that in a more comprehensive way like that, where we could actually see what the costs were. Let me give you an example to show you I'm not just trying to be specious about this. We, a number of years ago, engaged, I think it was in the 80s, Representative Kahn, even though she's quite young, knows I've been around here for a while. And so in the 80s, we had an experiment when Rudy Perpich was governor, in fact, the Democratic governor, on highways. and it was providing services, as you've described, as Madam Chair, Representative Downey, as was described, to do a competition on how those services were delivered. In the course of that, it was discovered that the contractors who were trying to compete with the state and had established their costs, supposedly on an apple-to-apple basis, were going into the yards where the salt-sand mixture was from the Department of Transportation and getting the salt-sand mixture of the Department of Transportation and then using that and not charging those costs against themselves. So that was one thing. The other one we had a similar situation in Bemidji where there was a company that put up a semaphore, a traffic light situation at a four-corner situation. Work was completely terrible. Their cost to do it was very low. We had to redo the entire semaphore on that, and there was no way to account for that in that. So I'm not against the idea in principle, but I think it needs much more robust thinking and collaboration to get that done. We did do that in the Transportation Accountability Act. We have a similar piece proposed in Senator Pogemiller's bill on merging a deed and economic development. There's a piece in there that would provide that to all state government. And in that context, we'd be willing to look at it. In this context, there's a gun to our head. The private provider that's already providing the service, and in fact is getting more of the billables, that's part of the problem, than the unit is getting, and I don't know this for sure, but I'm going to guess, does not provide its employees with health care or pensions. And I would add to you, Madam Chair, Representative Downey, and in all good faith, that when we do that, we shift the cost to society when workers don't have health care, when they don't have access to health care. That cost doesn't go away. It either results in the raising of premiums of private rates, all rates that you and I and everyone else who has insurance pays, or it does so by having people have to use MinCare or other public services. Okay. So rather than consider that now, I would ask you to still vote this amendment down and the support. But the union would be willing to look at comprehensive legislation that would look at these issues and how we could actually do this. The other piece of it, Madam Chair, I'm sorry to take this long with it, but yeah. It provides training to the bargaining unit and others on how to do the bid so that the bids can be done on an equal basis. And, we did that in Indiana and a number of other places, but I'll leave it at that. We would propose to, I take it as a goodwill proposal, but I would ask the committee to reject it.
Okay. You know, is there anything else that as I said, I intend to vote no on this, but I'm very interested in expanding the concept. I'm very interested in looking at a bill, again, following the history for the initial for how we worked on the DocuCom division, for how we did it on that, and then moving on from there. If we can do something of I guess maybe we should look at the language in the Pogemiller bill and see what's happening with that. But this, no other comments, I'd like to move to a vote on the amendment. We do have another thing we have to consider from the Secretary of State's office. So, Mr. Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And real quick, one of the things I think was brought up from the department that I think is really important, members, is, at least if I heard the testimony correct, is that 40% of the business that they take is from state agencies. So if we do have a serious problem here that we're under some sort of time constraints, I mean, the state's taken a double hit in a lot of these cases. So if this isn't necessarily the answer that the committee is willing to give, then it sounds like something needs to be done rapidly because we are taking a double hit here in many of these cases. So,
if you read the governor's letter or you read the newspaper this morning, the one article I got a chance to read, if an appropriation of $160,000 to solve this problem would be a minor part of the solutions of the problems that we're going to be facing before we get out of here or before we end the fiscal year or whatever is the important deadline to look at. So, it's not, I agree with you, but there are numerically more seriously problems facing us. Representative Kismar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but I have a question for Mr. Seid, but I think on that issue of money, I just came from Finance Committee this morning where there was another $1.35 million or so. That just was going to be taken off the bottom line cash. That even Representative, one of the other Democrat representatives, spoke and saying, where are you going to get the money from? And so you got that one, then you got this one. It's, you know, the old death by inches. It isn't just, if that were the only one, it'd be one thing. The question I have for you has to do with, in this particular situation, you know, when you're mentioning comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges, and I don't know why you're against bananas.
I'm fine with bananas, Madam Chair.
It's okay.
Full of potassium, I love them.
Yeah. That in this particular case, because it is an internal account, it has that kind of mechanism in it as far as what those costs are with those in there. And it's probably unique in that regard, and that you absolutely can have that. And so I think that's a core and a basis for you to do something imperative and deal with this on a more limited basis, because you have that. And so when you're competing, you kind of have a fundamental, what does it cost currently, is there. And so providing it at a cheaper rate, and you already have in the details of that as well, you have those employee things which include benefits and other things. I mean, it's like it's there for you to make use of. I just wonder if that works, and I would be interested in hearing your answer to that, if that makes any difference whatsoever.
Madam Chair, Representative, there are certainly costs that we know of, absolutely, cost of wages, cost of benefits, those type things. Not sure what else the other costs there would be on the state side. For instance, it's the union's positions that were rather dense and high management staff on the state side. I don't know where those costs are coming in to the equation for this unit. It's the union's position that that when we look at the comparison between a private sector piece and a public sector piece, are they going to be using state trucks? Are they going to be using their own trucks? Whose equipment are they going to be using? The example I gave from the 80s, from the transportation piece, where the contractor had said they could do this lower bid and ended up using the salt sand mixture of the state. Well, that's again not a banana and a banana, because they need to.
Now he's against pineapple.
And I love all fruits and vegetables. I try to eat my pineapple. I don't believe I have a fruit and vegetable gap or controversy.
Maybe we should start talking about things like turnips.
Actually, Madam Chair, I eat turnips as well. So, but I don't eat olives. I love olive oil, but I don't eat olives. I don't want to offend the olive eaters. Madam Chair, Representative, I think that we really need to lay out, as we did in the methodology for comparing costs, as we did in the Transportation Accountability Act. And that was done after some research and discussion to make sure we are doing that. We want to make sure that, you know, if in fact there are too many managers, particularly upper-level management, whose costs are being accreted to this unit, that's not being held against the workers for doing it. And I'm seeing people nod. I mean, that would not be fair. So, I mean, we need to just, again, I'm not in principle against looking at this thing, and I assure you we have looked at it, and we've done it in some places. But we really have to, I don't believe a shotgun approach to this is the way to do it today.
Okay.
We've been trying to sit down with the department. The department's been proposing a number of changes to things in the last few weeks, some of which we've known about. There's a bill in another committee the department hasn't even talked to us about, and they're proposing it. So maybe when they sit down with us and we have a chance to do that in a more robust fashion, we would be able to figure some of that out.
I would like,
Madam Chair, I would just like to wrap up. Yes. I do know, though, that in any internal unit like this, if there are other kinds of things that are being used, that in the state accounting system, those things are tracked. And that's the value when you have this type of an account. You have an advantage right away because those things are accounted for in there. The big thing that I would say is that sometimes the indirect value of supervision or coordination or some of the legal work that goes with some of these kinds of things is actually absorbed by the agency and not necessarily put in here. So it can go both ways. But the nice thing is that, you know, you have it there. And I know Madam Chair wants to move on. But I would suggest that in this particular instance, This is a good example, kind of a way to continue that discussion, as I'm sure you will.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Okay, thank you. We now have the vote on the Downey Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The amendment is defeated.
Representative
Chair. Okay, Representative Downey.
Thank you. So I appreciate a lot having toned up and cranked up the rhetoric, because I think it, in my mind, maybe ended us in a more positive place. And
when you're using a word like rhetoric, is the up or down, which is the proper phrase?
I'm not sure. Madam Chair. The liveliness of the debate, let's put it that way.
Okay.
More pointed.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I want to thank Mr. Sides for his comments. I think he is absolutely right, and I would look forward to working with him on that broader concept. And I just wanted to point out that in Senator Bonhoff's bill that hopefully we'll be able to conference, AFSCME has two representatives, one from Council 5 and one from 65, MAPE and SEIU. And I think this is some of the most exciting territory when we think about government reform, is how do you capitalize on the horsepower and the talent and the innovation of those organizations as part of something in the private sector. You look at ESOPs and employee stock option owners where the employees actually get the ownership. There's some really dynamic, positive things that can happen there, and I really appreciate that, and would be glad to even have a one-off conversation with you about how we could maybe accelerate some of that. So thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. The next item that we have before us is something that the Secretary of State needs. Mr. Black from the office, what's the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
810.
810. I'm Bert Black, the legal advisor to the Secretary of State's office.
Just a sec. I'll move the 810 amendment to put this before us. And you have a copy of it. Everyone has a copy of it. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is language which is substantially in House File 2678, which is the Agriculture and Veterans Affairs omnibus bill, which has already passed the House and is in conference. But something I learned many years ago from the chair is if you want something passed, put it everywhere. So we are asking to add this language. The language is almost exactly the same as in House File 2678. The only exceptions are three technical changes that were found by legislative staff in the other body. And Madam Chair, on line 1.22, in order to parallel one of the items they found, we would ask that you incorporate in your motion to add the words at before the period in 1.22 or non-public data. And the reason for that is because, of course, tax ID numbers are not private data on individuals. They are non-public data.
Okay, I'll incorporate that into the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to explain what this is. This deals with Social Security numbers. Social Security numbers are private data under Chapter 13 with three exceptions. The exceptions are the UCC information, the CNS, and an exception we're not dealing with, which is SSNs that are on and TINs that are on real estate documents. We're not dealing with that. We don't do real estate. But what is happening is that we are about to go online with our MBLS system, and both in the UCC and CNS areas, but particularly in CNS, which is farm liens, we are going to make that data available on the internet. We're not going to do it until the effective date of these sections, if they pass, because it's just right now it's a situation where it's a closed universe of grain, basically grain buyers. They sign up. They subscribe for a fee with our office, and we send them the information on a monthly basis of who has a farm lien against them. When you have a farm lien against you, the check for the grain has to be made out to both the farmer, the seller, and to the lender, to the bank, or other lending institution. And this is something that was instituted in the Federal Farm Bill of 1985, and I think Senator Boschwitz had a lot to do with that particular effort, because there was a problem with grain buyers selling grain to places several counties away, and then the bank never got the money, and there was at that time, it was during the farm crisis, there were some problems. The system has worked really well for almost 20 okay. years now.
I think we understand the issue. Is there anyone who'd like Representative Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Black, good to see you again. And in regards to this, I certainly do understand the Social Security number, but could you explain a bit, because the tax ID number is frequently used in a variety of ways, and I'm not quite sure why you want that included here, but maybe you could explain that a little bit further.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer. Well, two things. Number one, if we start differentiating between SSNs and tax ID numbers and how we treat them, that's really going to be a very difficult situation, because that means we're going to have to treat each of these filings on a case-by-case basis. Somebody is probably a person is going to have to look at that, and of course we're trying to move towards doing all this online. The second thing is that the federal government, at the time that we started doing CNS, the SSN or TIN was required by the federal government. The federal law was changed about 4 years ago, I think it was, so that now you can use the unique identifier instead of the SSN or TIN on the farm lien. The only state that's done that is Colorado. There's some problems with that. What we are proposing is that we would still collect the SSN or TIN, and we would produce a unique identifier based on that through what's called a hash result. It's an algorithm that creates a different number that's not the SSN, but can be used to group these names, which is what's required in the farm lien. I realize this is a lot of information for folks, but
not
for Representative Kiffmeyer. Yeah, we worked on this a fair amount, but it just that is still part of the federal law, and so we do have to collect the TIN. Mm-hmm. The TIN itself, in the farm lien context, is not particularly significant for the actual use of the farm lien. It's used to group the debtors together, so that you can make sure you've got the right set of filings on the right Robert Anderson, as opposed to maybe Robert Anderson that has a different SSN, similarly with a TIN, if you've got companies with similar names.
Okay. Anybody else? I think we're getting worn down. Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Black. All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, we now have, we believe, Senate File 3134 as amended before us. Any further discussion on that? And this just gets carried to finance, and we'll see many of you on finance, always and means.
Madam Chair, did we deal with the A9 amendment prior to when I came in, possibly?
That was taken off.
Oh, good.
Never okay. off. Okay. All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much, members, and thanks for being... Oh, the minutes. We have Representative Taft moves the minutes of April 20th. All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Madam
motion
Chair,
passes.
One other.
Yes, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Madam Chair, on the explanation of... sheet that was passed out here looks like this, okay?
Yeah.
On the bottom it says